Hey there, and welcome to the Confident Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Brooks. Join me as I sit down and chat with co-hosts, friends, and carefully curated guests and talk about all the things that empower you to become your best and most confident self. So let's get started. All right, ladies, welcome back. So today we have with us Aribi Vargas. And Aribi is a certified executive coach and the founder and CEO of Humble Rising, which empowers high-achieving women, leaders, and lawyers to create lives and careers full of joy, fulfillment, purpose, and personal alignment. She is a first-generation Latina lawyer, podcast host, mother, and women's life and high-performance coach. So we're going to have an incredible conversation because really all of what Aribi does specializes in helping women and high achievers. So this is why we're here, right? We want to become our best, most confident selves. We want to have it all. We want to be able to do it all. But more importantly, sustain it at a pace that feels in alignment and congruent with who we are today and the woman we're becoming. So welcome.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Rachel. It's so good to be here. I'm so looking forward to our conversation.
Yes. And of course, you know, I love, you know, when we read our bios, it's like all this, you know, all the achievements, all the accolades, and all these winning performances, it feels like. But really, who is Aribi behind all the titles? And I'd love for you to take us back a little bit. What is the story behind all of the works that you do?
So I would say the biggest turning point for me in my life was when I had my first child. So I am first generation, meaning I was the first generation born in this country. My parents are from the Dominican Republic. And the reason why I mention that is because that experience was so formative for me as a child, a teenager, as someone in my 20s and my 30s, even today, because of what I saw growing up, right? Like I saw an incredible work ethic. I saw what self-sacrifice means. I saw that firsthand. Like I understand the value of a dollar. I understand what it's like to not have all of the things, but to have a lot of love and a home, right? I learned that I couldn't have certain things, like certain things I wanted to do, we couldn't afford, and nor could my mother pick me up and drop me off and do all those things that I am able to do for my children now. And the experience, though, I remember as a young child saying to myself, I am going to be successful. Like, I am going to be successful. Like, that's not an option for me not to be successful. And yeah, my parents stressed education. I mean, that's what they stress. Like, you're going to get an education, you're going to go to college. Like, that's the ticket, right? And I believed that. And at that time, success meant to me to not be as stressed, to, you know, have money, to have titles, to have degrees. Like, that's what I thought of success, because that's what I thought it was. I didn't really know, right? But then fast forward, like, I became a lawyer. I worked in big law firms. I did a lot of different things, fast-paced environments. I always worked in very fast-paced environments with other high achievers. That's, like, the environments that I was always in. And the biggest turning point, though, that really shifted everything was when I had my first child, who is now 9 years old, and I had an identity crisis. I didn't know who I was. Like, after I had that baby, I was on leave, which is, Rachel, I was so privileged to have leave and paid. I had paid leave. That's such a privilege. For most of it was paid. But even the ability to take on extra leave and it not be paid, again, like, such a privilege. And I want to make sure, like, people understand that not everybody has that, and we don't have paid leave in this country. Like, I hope people really understand that it is not common. And yet I felt so lost as a person because I didn't have work there. What I realized, you know, as I was exploring this and, you know, looking back, right, I didn't have work to serve as my validation and affirmation every day. I didn't have the validation of being, quote unquote, productive and performing. I learned through that experience that I had equated my self-worth with my work, how I identified with my work, how I identify with my title and my status, and where I worked and how I got there. instead of equating my worth with like really deep inside who I am as a person. And I read Marianne Williamson's Return to Love, which I am obsessed with, and Brené Brown's Gifts from Perfection, which I'm also obsessed with. And that really was part of the beginning of me really uncovering like, oh, wait a minute. I was like created in love. Like, wait, what? Really? Wait, so I don't have to do anything to like earn that? And when you're working, especially when you're a law firm lawyer, you know, you bill every 6 minutes of your time. And you're taught to be very detail oriented about your time. And your worth literally is your time, right? If you're not billing enough, you're not as valuable because then clients aren't paying and the firm's not making money, right? But when all of that's taken away and I'm with my child as an infant, he's an infant, and I'm like, okay, so I just feed you, I change you, I make sure I like hug you and cuddle you. And that's great, but like I need to be doing something as if that wasn't doing anything, right? But I need to do something because I don't feel like I'm getting affirmation. There's no one telling me I'm doing a good job, right? And I felt like I needed that. And so I had to ask myself those questions. Who am I without my work? Who am I without even the journey of becoming a lawyer? Who am I without these titles, the status, even lifestyle? Who am I without these things? And when you start stripping it away, I was like, oh, I get it. Like, these things, I actually don't get to take these things with me when I die. So who am I really? And that's when I started to dig into and get curious about, wait a minute, who am I today? Is that who I want to be? Like, is that the Eddie V that's meant for this world? Is that the Eddie V that like God has called me to be, right? And I mean, fast forward, Rachel, to when I finally left corporate world and legal world completely to do my coaching speaking business full time, it was that same thing of feeling like there's a calling for greater. There's a calling for really truly stepping into your truth and your purpose. And you thought you got there, you thought you made so much progress, and you did. But there's one final leap you're gonna have to make right now to really answer this calling. And that's where I'm at right now. I mean, I skipped over years, but I mean, that's the short version of the story.
I love that. I'm literally getting goosebumps as you're sharing this, because so much of what you're sharing is parallel to my story.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, hearing this from somebody else is just such a great reminder. So I just want to thank you for sharing that, because this, you know, as we find ourselves in these seasons, right? How do we define success? How do we define our own worth, our value? And so much of that I see is put out there in the external by what we achieve, what we can do, what our value is based on others and our merit, right? So when you talked about your billable hours, right? That's your billable time. And we think, well, my time is value and I am my time. Mm-hmm. So I just probably imagine as you're feeding your child, you think, okay, that was 10 minutes. You're tallying up the cost, right? Because that identity is so much attached to, like you said, our work, our production. And if we're not producing or performing, we ask ourselves, so what are we here for?
That's right.
And you definitely talk about this with your high achieving clients and the performance work that you do. I'd love for you to share a little bit more about what is a high achiever, because I know that so many people say, well, I'm trying to do it all, so I feel like I'm a high achiever. Can you kind of exemplify what a high achiever is?
So a high achiever is someone who has reached a certain level of achievement. So now it depends on your industry. But for example, like a lot of people that I work with are typically law firm lawyers or in-house counsel lawyers. And typically those are people who went to law school. They are at like big name law firms, meaning you're working a lot of hours and you generally like, that's what you want for yourself. You like to achieve, accomplish, you like to check boxes. I don't think that's inherently bad. It is not inherently bad to want to get a college degree, right? It's really bad to want to make partner at a law firm or to want to like be a gold medalist at the Olympics. Like, absolutely not. That is, there's nothing wrong with that. The issue is that most, if not all, high achievers start to equate external validation and affirmation with their self-worth. That is where it becomes at your expense, and that's where you have to check it. It's not that it's inherently bad to want to be ambitious and achieve. That's fine. That's actually, I'm ambitious. I have a fire in my belly. That's part of who I am. And I lean into that as a strength. However, that is also what has come at my own expense. When it also leads to burnout, when you're constantly in achieve, perform, produce, and you get into, this is what they call it, like the hedonic treadmill, the hamster wheel, I have to keep going. Because when you keep achieving and you haven't defined for yourself what success is, you're going to keep reaching for it because you haven't defined it for yourself yet. You're going to go after achievement after achievement after achievement, and it's never going to suffice because you haven't defined for yourself, when is it enough for me? And that's something that with clients, they struggle with that. That's what they, what does success look like for me? What would a good life look like for me? Because the conditioning that they have been living in, their brain literally has to be rewired to think of this life that it looks a little different than what they've been so conditioned to believe is success. Because we think of traditional markers of success. And I always say that, look, your titles are cool. Your car is cool. Your house is cool. Your clothes are cool. Yeah, sure. It's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. Yes.
You get to take none of that shit with you when you die. You know what you get to take with you? Did you have fun? Did you take risks? You get to take your courage. You get to take the loving memories of your, you know, with your loved ones and your experiences. And you get to take your truth with you. You get to take meaning with you. But you don't get to take these material things. You get to take money with you. So all the money, people always talk about money. Well, I need more money. I need more money. I'm like, you don't get to take that. Yes, it's important for you to be responsible. Yes, it's important for you if you want a certain lifestyle. But I would also ask, like, what is the purpose of the lifestyle? What is the goal of that? And I think it would serve people to think about their life more holistically in that way.
Ooh, I love that. And a couple of things that come to mind, and I know that experience, when we look at hindsight, right? So experience is our best teacher.
Yeah.
At what point did you realize that you were chasing this success, that you were burning yourself out? And when you're on the other side, you're thinking, okay, I could just learn from my hindsight in my rear view.
Yeah.
At what point were you like, oh my goodness, this is happening. What is going on? Like that.
You know what's funny? It's not funny, but I wouldn't say it's funny, but I think of it a lot. I'm going to say this is the truth. Even in law school, I felt the nudge. I was like, I felt that voice being like, I don't know if this is it. Literally, I remember that. And I remember even being able to work at a law firm and going through getting acclimated to a totally, for me, new culture, like law firms. I didn't even know what they were before I really got there. There was always that little tap on my shoulder and that voice being like, I don't know if this is like fitting with you. I don't know if this is your, like, this is what you're made here. Rachel, was it me? It just kind of shut up.
Yeah, not sure what happened, but when you had, I know where we left off.
Okay.
But the tap of where, when you were asking yourself, if this is what you were made for.
Yes. So I had that tap of, is this what you're made for? Is this what you were created to do? And I kept having that. And what would happen is I would get surges of energy and validation. And so I would be like, okay, boys, thank you, but bye-bye. And then I would get surges of energy and, oh, you're doing a great job, and feeling like, oh, but I could be partner one day, and, oh, that would be successful. And I've been working so hard all of my life to be that and to do something successful. And what that really meant was it would be seen as successful. It would mean that all of my sacrifices, my parents' sacrifices, were worth it. Because look at where she is. Look what she did with that. It became not about really me and what my calling and what I was meant to do. Although in that moment, Rachel, like when you're in it, you get the little tab and then you're like, uh-huh, and you stuff it down. Like feelings. We just stuff down feelings. You distract. You avoid. You stuff down. That's what I did. And it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was probably more subconscious than like an intentional, let me not listen to this voice, right? You hear something, you have a thought, you're like, you know, whatever, right? And you move on. That's really, it was throughout my entire career. And then when I left law firm life after I had my son about a year after that, I left law firm life and I went in-house doing litigation and doing compliance. And then I moved into compliance and I did HR and, you know, there's a whole story there too. But I was always trying to get closer to alignment because that voice was always there. And I would say the moment where I really decided that the traditional success marker and the traditional expectations, even the ones I had internalized and been conditioned to internalize, where all of that really came to a head was when I decided I was going to leave legal and compliance. I didn't want to practice as a lawyer anymore, and I wanted to do leadership development and executive coaching at the company I was at. I think that was the moment, because that is the moment where people who had known me as a lawyer, that was almost my entire network, right, were asking me, wait a minute, but you were going to do all these other things. And I'm like, I know, I kind of said I wanted to be a general counsel, but I don't want to do that anymore. And I kind of said I wanted, but I don't really want to do that. And there, I remembered speaking to our chief legal officer at the time about this specifically. He said, wait, hold on. This means you're not going to be a lawyer anymore. Are you okay with that? And I said, yeah, I feel great about it. I feel great. And I did. I felt great about it. And he's like, okay, well then, like, let's try to get into HR. And I think that was the moment where I had to finally start truly redefining success in a way that was of true alignment with myself. Because the lawyer identity is very strong and powerful. Like it, and to let go of that because I'm coming more into my truth and my purpose. Again, it's like gradually you're trying to keep your alignment tight. The tighter your alignment, to me, the happier you are, the more satisfied you are, the better you feel in your body and your spirit. And as I got tighter over time, and now I feel like I'm like super tight, you just feel so much more anchored, right? And now it's not about whether someone like likes a post I do. I do it from a place of my soul and my spirit. And I'm like, this is my truth. And if you're down with that, that's cool. And if you're not, that's cool too, right? But it's, I'm in such a different place, like spiritually, I think, and emotionally. I've also evolved over time, which like we get older, we live more life, we evolve. But I also think there are people where time passes and they actually don't evolve that much. You don't grow that much. And so I always encourage people that you can either wait for a reckoning moment and grow in that moment, which you have no choice, or you can kind of generate some growth and generate some evolution for yourself so that you don't look back on your life, which I have clients who do this. They, you know, they're in a certain position, a very high achieving position. And they say, I don't even know how I got here. I don't even know what's going on, right?
I feel so empty.
It's because they miss the meaning. They miss the alignment part. They miss the truth part in there.
Yeah. I can, you're really speaking to my soul. It's like that whole redefining. You know, I went through a season personally of like, I had to redefine who I was.
Yeah.
And then next, you know how life shows you the same lesson just in like a different chapter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the redefining success. And much to your story here, it's like I was such a high achiever. And to be honest, I still am. But it's more of that awareness where I was checking the boxes, doing the thing, climbing the mountain, getting all the way to the top. And I'm just looking there and it's like, damn, this is it. This sucks. And it was so empty. It's just this vapidness that was like, why? How? And so that, you know, again, redefining success. So as I'm finding myself in this, however you want to coin it, like a 2.0 or 3.0 version or a new chapter, a new season, everybody coins it differently. But, you know, we're coloring it this way because, you know, for those that are listening, it's give yourself the permission to start again. Because you're never starting over from nothing. You've got age, you got wisdom, you got knowledge, you got experience. And you're starting over from the day that you choose that I don't want to do this anymore. Or this is who I am. Or this is who I want to become. So even in our conversation here, you've talked about so many numerous roles, so many different identities, and all the transitions that come through it. I'd love for you to share a little bit and unpack that, you know, what it's like to struggle with these different identities. I mean, all the way from being a first generation Latina to going into law school, to realizing that wasn't what you wanted to do, then becoming a mother, to a coach, to all these different hats and roles and identities. And I commend you on that because it's like we're always finding our way. And for those people who say like they found their way, they haven't found their way forever. It's just, they're finding their way in the moment. So I'd love for you to unpack a little bit of that.
So I frame transitions, like the way you talk about like version 2.0, 3.0, different chapters. I frame transitions, my own transitions as well, as different seasons. And although, you know, if you're like in New England, we have four seasons. And some people will say, yeah, some life has winter, spring, fall, summer. I think of my life as had different seasons, meaning when I wanted to go to law school and when I became a lawyer and I was at a law firm, that was a season of my life. There were certain things that I thought were true that felt true for me. I may have had that tap on my shoulder and that voice, but what I felt was true at the time was that I was going to be a lawyer. I was going to be a partner at a law firm in the future. Like that was my truth at the time. I was working very hard. I was having a good time. That's what I was doing. And that felt like it made sense to me at the time. I didn't know what I didn't know. And then as I transitioned into different things that I was doing and I switched roles a few times, again, that was a similar season of like achieving and doing checking boxes. But again, I felt like I had to do that to reach what I thought was success for me, right? And then when I had my first child, okay, now you're entering a totally different season because you're grappling with your identity. Like that's what I shared before, is you're grappling with an identity that you have never stepped into before. It is foreign. Your brain's like, what is this? I don't know how to do this. We haven't done this before. And so your brain is freaking out. That's at least what it felt like to me. And it took a while to step into that identity and make it my own because it was a different season. And I always say this to people who are like, come to me and they're like, oh, we're thinking of having children. And I'm like, I like hate these conversations because that's very personal. It's a very personal decision. But I do say this. You are never going to be fully ready to be a parent. I was like, however, you do have to be okay with eventually being okay with a change in your lifestyle. Meaning, if you want to be a present parent, you can't just like do whatever you want every evening like you did before. You can't impromptu be all over the place like you were before. Because you have like a child who probably wants you at home and who loves you so much and you want to be there. Like you can't do what you did in a previous season. You probably have to shift some things to feel less resistance in the current season. And so that's what's something that has always guided me is when I feel inner tension or resistance in a season, it's because I haven't accepted that I'm in that season yet. So how can I lean more into the season and what do I have to let go of the previous one? So I think the motherhood one, there are these shifts that happen. Like the first time you become a mom and then when I had my second and my third, those are all different identity shifts. And the last one, like the third one, I choose now three. I think that was one of the bigger ones.
Because now it's like,
I have three kids, that's a lot.
And because
a recognition that I'm not having any more children. This is the group. Like, this is the unit. And also
what having girls did for me specifically. Boy, my son to me is like one of my greatest teachers on like patience, presence, all the things you could think of. He's like a teacher to me, 1000%.
But my girl, because they're women, they're going to be women. One day, my daughter's always like, I'm a woman now. And I'm like, you are not a woman.
Like, biologically, you're not. And also, you're not.
But when I think of them, I think of how much I want to show them through me living my life, what is possible. And what does it mean to live a life that's truly reflective of you? What does that mean? And to take care of yourself. Like when I go downstairs to the basement and I do a workout and my daughters come downstairs and they want to be hanging out in the weight room where I'm doing something.
Like, I'm not telling them, come down, see me exercise, like this important. I don't even tell them it's important to exercise. I'm just doing it.
And my hope is that they internalize that and they say, oh, mommy, when I was little, or even when they're teenagers, she takes time to take care of herself. She gives herself space. Oh, that's normal. I'm supposed to do that. Like, that's something that people do.
Because one of my fears is that my children will think what I used to think is that your worth is defined by your productivity and your performance and external validation.
And so I'm trying to show them a different way of living.
And because now I can, and they're literally outside the door because my office door is see-through. And I'm going to say hello and I'm going to say, I'll see you later. But they gave me a different level of motivation,
especially my girls.
And that was a transition too of like, oh, I really have to, if I expect them to live truthfully and in an aligned way, I have to
model that.
And I think being a mother is one of the strongest identities I have because of the fuel it gives me. Like, it's a lot of fuel. Even being first generation, I have fuel. Like, I'm like, oh my God, my parents like came from, like, I can't even imagine how hard it was to raise up and to do it in your early 20s when you're like a kid. Like, when I was in my early 20s, I don't know what I was doing. Like, I was in law school, but I was kind of doing whatever I wanted, right? It's not the same when you have children when you're in your 20s. And that's what they did. They were growing like up with us, right? So I think back to all of the different identity shifts I've had and experiences. And I always think about them as seasons. And that who I am today, Rachel, like, of course, I couldn't have been this person 5 years ago. Like, I had to evolve into her. And so people, I was just talking to someone right before, maybe like an hour ago, I was talking to someone who she's very early in her career. And she was like, I just hope that I could be like as bold as you one day. And I looked at her and I was like, what makes you think you're not bold for where you are right now in your life? Like, we're comparing ourselves to the future, someone who is literally has lived longer than us and has a lot of experience. But what about like comparing yourself to the person you were a year ago? Like, why can't that be a measure of your evolution, your progress, right? So I always look at my transitions and my identity shifts as seasons and what I continue to grow into. And the one thing that I'm always looking forward to is like further evolution. Like, how else can I grow? What are these moments there to teach me? Even when it's really hard and sometimes really stressful, like how can I see the opportunity here versus seeing it as like a threat, right? I'm thinking of how can I move through and see it as an opportunity to lean into. And that can still be hard, Rachel. Like, that's still hard to do, but I'm in a totally different place than I was in previous seasons, or some people call on previous lives, right?
And I think that, you know, you summed it up so well. It gets easier as you grow, right? It's the resiliency, because it's a snapback and you realize, okay, this is just
season.
Been through a few of them. This one's going to be shorter because I
know now what to do, what not to do.
And it just reinforces that confidence and boosting that esteem. So it's like, you know, as you come through any new challenge, yes, there's bewilderment. Yes, there's fear. Yes, there's like, holy crap, I had never even considered this identity or role for myself. But you know that you're resourceful. You know that you'll figure it out. You know that you've overcome some really challenging and tough seasons, that it's almost like life just weathers us for these storms that are ahead of us.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I love that we're just conditioned and to win the whole weathering, right?
So with your clients, when you work with your clients, what are some of the areas that you really focus on or some of the main concerns that they're coming to you with? Is it similar to what we're sharing about today? Yes. A lot of them are at some kind of transition point or inflection point, and they need a re-anchoring and a recentering. They literally have never done anything like a life will exercise. They have never done anything like looking at their core values, their strengths. They haven't done any of like that work around clarity, energy, any of the work that we do together. They haven't done that true mirror work, which is who am I without these other things? And like, what is my truth? And what do I actually really want versus what have I been conditioned to want? What have I been conditioned to want because it's available to me, right? But I will say, Rachel, for every client, I think the number one root cause thing they're coming to me with, but they don't realize it, right? Because if you come to me like, oh, I have no time for anything, I don't have time to care of myself, my job is so crazy, they come to me with that too, but they're still at some kind of inflection of like, something has got to give. I know something is not right. I need help, right? But the root cause of it all to me will always come back to self-worth and self-love. Always, always. Now, you often have to get there, or they'll recognize, they're like, oh, it's because I don't feel like I really deserve that. Or, oh, I feel like I have to earn my rest. Or, oh, I feel like I have to earn this. Or, oh, I want this because it's what's expected. But then they're like, but I don't know what I want because I've always done what other people said was supposed to be successful. So that's where we really do a lot of work. And what is so inspiring, it's honestly inspiring to me, is when someone comes to me and they're like, I just don't know what to do. I don't think it's possible to do anything else. I don't know what else I'm going to do. They're getting into like a rabbit hole. And then when coaching finishes, and even when I speak to them like months later, they're like, oh, I'm thriving. And I really didn't know if it was possible for life for me to be different, for me to think differently, for me to feel differently. And now I know it is because I'm living in that. And they're still going through different challenges, right? Everything's not like blissful. But they have tools. And they know how to check in with themselves. They know how to go deep. They know what questions to ask themselves. They know how to pull out their toolbox. They practice those strategies, right? To dig a little deeper, do their reassessment. They know how to tap into themselves. Whereas before, when you're in a hamster wheel on the hedonic treadmill, you actually don't have that skill yet, unless you've done it before. And then you choose to be on the treadmill, right? So that's what I think I love the most about it, is that they leave with a set of tools that they can access independent of anybody. And that's what I always tell them when we start coaching. Because I had a client who, like, she wanted to stay with me, like, continuously. And I'm like, you are doing great. Like, you have changed your life. And you can continue. She's like, no, but I want, like, an accountability partner. I'm like, but you are your own accountability partner now. Like, you're doing the thing. Because sometimes I want to have someone to be like, no, like, I must continue. I'm like, but you are. You're now embodying it. And once you're embodying it, you don't need me. And I don't want to be needed. Like, I want you to do it on your own. And then you show someone else how to do it. Right. Everyone doesn't need a coach. Like, just you can show someone else how you did it, how someone like you, who people thought had no time for anything, no time for herself, could not, you know, get over anything, how you did that. I love that ripple effect. Mm-hmm. And the ripple effect of seeing someone
anchored in their self-worth that is not about what someone else thinks of them. Like, that's really powerful.
I agree. I think that, you know,
like you mentioned about the hamster wheel or the treadmill, so many of us are just so blindly following what we think we have to do or what should be done, all those shoulds.
Yeah.
We don't even realize that we're on a hamster wheel. We don't even realize that we're on that conveyor belt like that. You know, at the airport, it's the one that just stand there next thing you know, because you've got your head down looking at your phone and you're going, oh my gosh, you're on the next one. And next one, you're like, oh, I missed my gate. And so, but it's like, we just blindly go through it. And the concept of self-awareness is such a light bulb moment, because when we could turn that light on, we could say, oh my gosh, this is the room I'm in. This is the situation I'm in. This is how I got, well, maybe I don't know how I got here, but at least now I know where I'm at.
Yes.
And that's a starting point.
Yeah. Yes.
I love
it's
that.
It's not awareness. Yeah. I always, always celebrate clients for their self-awareness. Like, Rachel, there's so many people who they're just in the wheel. They don't even know.
They don't know they're in a wheel. They have to know all these. Who can know?
And so for someone to say, I think something is going on and I'm feeling differently and I know that something has shifted and I just don't know what's going on, but I know how I'm feeling right now. That's really powerful, because what they've started to do, they've started to tap in to themselves, and they've started, even though they don't realize it, they've started to like quiet some noise around them, which gives the space for them to really tap in and go deeper. And that's why I think it's so important. And when I talk to clients and I'm like, wow, you're very self-aware. They're like, oh. And even when I celebrate them for certain things, I'm like, wow, you should be really proud of yourself for that. They're like, really? And I'm like, wow, we have so much building internally to do, like building our, like, we just don't do it. We're so hard on ourselves. And again, because, and Rachel, you will totally resonate with this. What happens is we don't get the congratulations when it comes to personal growth. We don't, that's not necessarily quote unquote visible, like a reward, an award, a promotion, like a salary bump. Like, you don't get, it's not perceived to have the same quote unquote value, right? But when you, like, if you inherently know that you've grown and that you've evolved, what happens is you don't need someone to tell you did a good job with that, right? Like, you feel different, and that's the reward in and of itself. Is when you feel more aligned and satisfied and content, and you feel like you're on the path that you chose. You're not on this treadmill. Or like my daughter, she loves worms. My 7-year-old loves worms. She loves to pick them up and play in the dirt and all that good stuff. And one day she came to me and she says, Mommy, I'm really upset. Mommy, I'm really upset. And I said, why? And she said, because the worms, they're all dead on the sidewalk. It had rained. And she said, the worms didn't know. They had to go back into the soil. They didn't know it until too late. So they died on the sidewalk. They basically dried out. When I was talking to her about it, she kept saying they didn't know it was too late. They didn't know until it was too late. And when I think of a lot of women who are on the hamster wheel, like, a lot of them don't realize it until it's too late and they're burnt out. And they have their like knees to the floor moment. And then they have, then now with the health crisis, now they get into gear. But it's almost like, why do we have to wait until we dry out like worms, or we literally fall to the ground? Like, we don't have to wait for those moments to tap into ourselves and feel more connected and decide we want to do things differently.
Ooh, that's so powerful.
I mean, who knows that worms could teach us that lesson? But it's
from the innocence of a child, that
sometimes it goes back to just being that childlike behavior or that childlike wonderment of, you know, even though we're adults, sometimes we forget to be in that playful mind or that curious spark that ask those questions, because those questions are really the questions we need to ask ourselves, like the obvious.
Yeah.
The behavior. Who am I? What do I want? And when you said you asked your clients this, and they're just like kind of
dumbfounded in a moment. Like, well, I never really paused to think about.
And I remember just when I was starting my personal growth journey, Cash, forever ago, feels like, but those were the questions that were asked me. Somebody asked me, who are you? And it was immediately all my titles, successes, and accolades.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't care about that. And I said, okay, well, I'm not. And it said all the things that I'm not. But I ran out of things to say. I didn't have anything else in my hat.
So
I was just like, ooh, well, I guess that's where I need to start.
Yes.
So obviously the work that you do is so needed. The clients that you're working with are obviously getting these transfer, you know, you're working with them and guiding them. And I love that you say, you don't need me. You can, and you're still in that faith and confidence in themselves to go out there and at least give them a go. And if it doesn't work out, you're there for a place to land if they continue to need that work. So I'd love for you to share with our listeners, one, how they can find you and learn more about the works that you do, and then how they can connect with you as well.
Honestly, the best place to find me is LinkedIn. So if you just search for my name, Adibi Vargas, you'll see me on LinkedIn. You can also go to my website, adibivargas.com. And there you can sign up to be on my email list. I call it my Women Empowerment email community, where I share things that I don't share on LinkedIn. I share more personal, like much more personal stories and more actionable strategies where I can really explain things in an email versus sharing that on social media or anything of that nature.
And the other way to find me is the podcast,
the Humble Rising podcast, which Rachel, you've been on, and your episode will be published soon. So the podcast is a labor of love and a passion of mine of women sharing stories on how to live fulfilling lives and have fulfilling careers. And how do you break through all of these barriers? And how do you break through your own internal barriers? So those are the main ways to reach me. And I do have a group coaching program. And so to learn more about that, people can join the email list so they have first access to enroll for that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And of course, all of that will be in the show notes below. So be sure to follow. And if this episode resonates with you, be sure to give Adibi a message, a DM. Just let her know. It's like, this is the work that we do. We want to know that our work is being impacted and we don't know whose ears are listening. So reach out. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rachel, for having me.
Hey there. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Confident Woman Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did, please be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. Thanks again for listening.